Counsel, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
This is the case of State Farm Fire and Casualty Company versus TFG Enterprises LLC. We will begin by members of the court introducing themselves, and then we will introduce, obviously, counsel who are here. I'm Mike Hevigan. I'm the Chief Justice. And by seniority on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Jeff Funk. Good morning.
Jonathan Papik. Good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
And counsel, do we have, is it Mr. Dorward? Are you here today?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are you going to be arguing?
I will be arguing on behalf of the appellant. Yes.
Will anyone else be arguing with you?
No, Your Honor.
Very good. Welcome to you. And Mr. Fahey, are you here today?
I am, Your Honor.
Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No doubt.
Thank you very much, then. Mr. Dorward, good morning to you again, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Tom Dorward on behalf of appellant. I point first to the first issue is the occurrence issue. This case hinges on whether appellants properly pled and proved an occurrence for purposes of the insurance policy to show a genuine issue of material fact to avoid summary judgment. And our argument is that there was an occurrence and appellant presented sufficient evidence of an occurrence. In paragraph 10 of appellant's answer to the complaint, the appellant stated that they had no intent, had no foresight or knowledge of any defect in the property. That shows that there must have been some occurrence that caused this damage. If appellants had no knowledge, there couldn't have been any intent.
Do I understand your position correctly that your position is that you showed there was an occurrence, you just didn't show what that occurrence was?
Yes, Your Honor. The underlying case is still pending. So our belief is that that should have gotten an opportunity to be heard. An expert witness could have been brought in. There could have been testimony at trial. We hadn't got yet pinpointed what that occurrence is, but something caused this occurrence. And the insurance policy itself actually states that exposure to conditions is covered. And that's what one argument we would make is that the defect was caused by exposure to conditions. So
is the underlying lawsuit brought because of bodily injury, personal injury, or property damage?
Because of property damage, yes.
Aren't the allegations breach of contract and fraud?
Correct. The allegations are breach of contract and in fraud and negligent misrepresentation. So our argument is that the district court erred in granting summary judgment because, in essence, the district court just took those allegations at face value, saying, "Well, you know." And Appellee's argument is that the occurrence was the filing of the lawsuit. Rather than that there was this underlying occurrence that caused the damage. And the district court took those allegations at face value, saying, well, there's negligent misrepresentation, there was fraud, so there was intent. Therefore, the occurrence doesn't apply because the case law states that an occurrence is only accidental, unforeseen, or not volitional.
Is it your position that this insurance policy would provide coverage for fraudulently representing the condition of property when you sell it?
No, it's not. But our position is that there was no fraud. We denied knowledge of a defect, And so our position is that without knowledge, and if it was unforeseen, the case law states that an occurrence, it can be an accident. I'd point you to the Eighth Circuit case, Wood versus Safeco, which does state that a negligent misrepresentation can count as an accident for purposes of an occurrence. So to me, this case was decided.
I beg your pardon. Was that authority to which you refer reading a policy, which I think maybe in the industry is called the fire policy, right? Right? Isn't that the lingo?
I believe so, but the occurrence definition, I believe, was very similar, if not the same.
Well, the fact that the lingo is a fire policy suggests a category of events that's a little bit different than a verbal error.
Our argument is that in this position, as I said, the insurance policy covers exposure to conditions, and without proving fraud or intent, as I said, we pled no knowledge of the defect, and then in response to request for admissions, we pled no knowledge, and in answers to interrogatories. So there is no intent, and our argument is that the insurance policy is sufficiently ambiguous and contradictory in terms of the exclusions, whereas Apley also argues that the exclusions apply. We argue that they don't. We argue that the business liability coverage applies and the property damage liability applies.
What is ambiguous?
I beg your pardon. I think what we might be confusing is that whether or not you have a defense, it may not be a covered event. That's a different issue, the latter of which is before us.
Well, and even if we're addressing the issue of defense, the case law states that the duty to defend is broader than the duty to indemnify. So our argument first is that State Farm does have to defend. They have defended up until now.
If there's no way that it's a covered event, there's no duty to defend, correct?
Correct, but we don't know that it's not a covered event yet because that hasn't been addressed. We believe we have sufficiently shown there was an occurrence by stating that we had no knowledge or foresight of this. An occurrence was accidental, it was not foreseen, and we had no knowledge of it. If we had no knowledge of it, we couldn't have caused it.
What is ambiguous about an exclusion that says business liability does not apply to property damage or personal injury to premises you sell, give away, or abandon? Where's the ambiguity?
Right. So our argument is that's a separate section than the property damage section. And as we stated in our brief, the property damage covers property damage. The business liability section would only cover business liability in terms of selling or renting the property. Our clients engaged in buying property, renovating it, and selling it or renting it. So the business liability, if the business liability section doesn't apply, then we would go to the property liability section, and that does apply.
What's the alternative reasonable interpretation of that exclusion? How do you not read it as there's no business liability coverage for property damage or personal injury to premises you sell, give away, or abandon?
Our reasonable interpretation as the insured, and the case law states that the Allstate versus Novak case requires you to go outside the pleadings. I'm trying to find the case here. I apologize. The case law in the Eighth Circuit states that that the reasonable interpretation of the insured is what the coverage should be weighted in the district court. And our reasonable interpretation is that if the appellee's argument is to be accepted, then this policy is basically rendered useless for someone who went into this policy intending for it to cover their renovation and rental and sale of the properties.
If your client bought a policy that doesn't cover their business, whose fault is that?
Well, it would be ours, but our argument is that it does cover the business. That, as we said, even if this exclusion, if the appellee's argument is accepted, it renders the business liability and the property damage liability sections would be would render the coverage meaningless. So our argument is that we went in, we it does cover it. We proved an occurrence. There was an occurrence, so it's covered under the section that covers exposure to conditions. And
would it still cover damage to property owned by others? Would it still cover personal injury?
Yes.
So there's some coverage even under appellee's interpretation.
That's correct. Our argument, as we said, is that it's ambiguous, and we do believe that it was to cover the renovation, rental, and sale. Sorry.
But I just want to make sure I understand that you're conceding that even under Appellee's interpretation of the exclusions, there's some coverage.
There's minimal coverage. There's some coverage, but under our interpretation, this instance is covered. And I'd point lastly to the Hartford case and the Lippincott case, which clearly showed intent of fraudulent concealment. In this case, there's no intent to conceal anything.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dorwart. Mr. Fahey, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Brian Fahey of the law firm of Fraser Stryker, appearing for Appley State Farm Fire and Casualty. This appeal comes to this court on the granting of Appley's motion for summary judgment. Although appellants nominally resisted that motion below, appellants never disputed any of the material facts that we asserted in support of the motion, and they never introduced any evidence in resistance thereof. For that reason, when it appeared at the district court, it was ripe for decision and no material facts, dispute of material facts existed. That's critical for a few reasons, primarily being this: it was the appellant's burden to show through evidence that there was an occurrence, that the occurrence caused property damage, applicable property damage under the policy, and that all of that occurred during the policy period. Now, I just want to clear up one point quickly from appellant's argument. I believe appellant stated that it's our position that the occurrence was the filing of the lawsuit. Under our position, there was never an occurrence that qualified under the policy, certainly not the filing of the lawsuit. In our brief, we cited cases that in considering similar situations to this one involving misrepresentations, negligent or fraudulent of a sale, the event that they looked to, although it's not an occurrence under the policy, the event that they looked to was the making of the misrepresentation, because that's the event that the plaintiff alleges caused them damage in the underlying suit. Now, again, it's our position that's not an occurrence under the policy, but also there's no dispute that that event did not cause any property damage. Any defects that exist in the property pre-existed that event. I also want to, regarding the failure by appellants to identify any occurrence whatsoever, much less prove it through evidence, appellants were asked through discovery what occurrence they were alleging. They did not provide one. This is in our bill of exceptions. They did merely cite back to the policy as self-explanatory. Again, they had that opportunity on the motion for summary judgment to present evidence of an occurrence. None of that happened. Again, it's not just the lack of an occurrence, but even if an occurrence could be shown, there's no causation with the property damage. The only possible damages identified by appellant in their briefing were economic purely economic damages, but the policy clearly requires that property damage be physical damage to tangible property. Purely pecuniary damages simply are not the type of damages that would qualify under the liability policy. I also would like to touch on appellant's citing to section one of the policy that it's our position that doesn't apply here. There was never a claim made under section one of the policy. When we filed this action, we cited only to those sections of section two, the liability policy, the liability coverage to which appellants made the claim to State Farm in the first place. And the terms of that are clear that the policy only covers, I beg your pardon, that the business liability portion of the policy only covers claims caused by an occurrence for bodily injury, personal injury, or property damage. And the damages alleged in the underlying lawsuit by the plaintiff are not property damage. They're essentially saying there was a representation made, representations claimed the value of the property to be at this, the value of the property is that, and we are owed the difference. It's the misrepresentations that control the extent of damages. Very, very briefly regarding the exclusions. So again, and I'll just echo Justice Miller-Lerman's question here, but this is obviously a separate issue regarding exclusions that the court frankly need not even get to, because there's been no showing that coverage was triggered at all, because there was no occurrence and no causation subject to that occurrence. But regarding the exclusions, potential ambiguity as asserted by appellant here was not raised below. It was not discussed. This is the first we're hearing about it. Appellant has not offered, as Justice Pappy pointed out, appellant has not offered a contrary meaning to which the exclusions could be susceptible. And then just to touch on appellant's reply brief briefly, when appellant argues in the reply brief that the exclusions would swallow the entirety of the coverage, it very conveniently leaves out, specifically referring to exclusions 2B and 2C, that those exclusions only apply to property damage to property owned by the appellant or the insured, or to property in the care of the insured. Again, there was no material dispute about this below. Appellants admitted in our discovery through request for admission that any property damage at issue in the underlying suit did not exist before they owned the property, and that during the relevant period, the property was within their care and control, was owned by them. That only applies to their own property. Therefore, the host of situations we cite in our brief regarding slip and falls, damage to adjacent property, all of that would still be covered under the business liability section. The business liability section provides robust coverage. We don't think there's any dispute about that. Therefore, there's no ambiguity on the matter.
Mr. Fahey, appellant's position, as I understood it, was that there's some relevance to the fact that in the underlying lawsuit, they've denied all of this. They denied that they made any misrepresentations. They denied that there was any fraud. That have any relevance to coverage at all?
No, Justice Pappick, and the reason for that is that even if the failure to disclose was, for saying that argument, completely innocent on their part, that still doesn't bring it within section two of the policy. It only covers property damage caused by an occurrence. And the misrepresentation claims, even if they're failures to disclose property, the defects alleged don't fall within the coverage. Unless there's any further questions for me at this time, I'll wrap it up and simply ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court, and thank you again for your time, everyone.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. So, counsel, you are excused. This concludes arguments for the day. So the court is also adjourned. Again, counsel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.